This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World. We're about to speak to Kurt Schwenk, who is the general manager of the Digital Cinema Division at NEC Solutions America. Welcome back to Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World.
Thank you, Mark.
The last time we talked, you gave our listeners a very comprehensive explanation of how digital cinema works, and thanks to the wonders of digital audio technology, they can click on a link that's going to be provided as part of this article and listen to that whenever they'd like and get a really detailed picture about how pictures are created through digital cinema technology. But I'm hoping you could give our listeners now just a short and more basic explanation as a background for what we're going to talk about here, about how digital video files are produced, transmitted to theaters, and projected on the big screen.
Sure. In the short answer version of this, basically, you can still capture images on either film or digitally. If it's captured on film, you then digitize it, which most films do today anyway through the post-production process for adding of effects and just for simple editing at this point. So once you digitize it, whether it be from the camera or digitizing the camera negative, once you have completed the production and post-production on the film, it is then delivered to a facility such as Access Digital Media, such as Technicolor, such as Deluxe, where they will then do the compression format and duplicate it out either onto hard drives or DVD files that then get distributed out to the cinemas capable of playing digital cinema playback. In the long term, that will probably be replaced by a combination of fiber channel delivery as well as satellite delivery.
Okay, and then after it gets to the theater, say a little bit about how it's protected and how the digital file becomes a stream of light.
Well, basically, the file is, as you said, a file. It's a digital file. It's not a videotape-type image. It is actually a file, the same as a Word document or Excel is a file, except it's a much bigger file with compression and encryption wrapped around it.
Right.
So the way the systems work is that keys are sent out to the system, and those keys are recognized by the content, and the content is recognized by the server, and only then can it be unlocked. The servers also have the decoder capabilities for whatever format it's been encoded into. In the long term, that will be JPEG 2000, and the content is then unlocked, decompressed, and sent through to the digital cinema projector, which takes the digital file and plays it out as images. It's a digital picture being played as zeros and ones.
Right. Now, in fact, this issue of converting a file to a projection on a screen, there are machines, and I think NEC makes a lot of them, that people hook their laptops up to with PowerPoint slide presentations and show people who are trying to keep from falling asleep in the conference room. Those images are projected through a little box, aren't they?
Correct. That's a very rudimentary form. The projectors that are the digital cinema projectors, in the case of our projector and our two primary competitors, they are all Texas Instruments DLP dark chip digital cinema grade technology.
So they essentially are like those PowerPoint projectors, except we could say on steroids to a large extent.
Most of the PowerPoint projectors that most people would use and know are actually LCD technology.
Oh, I see.
The higher end of that, you know, like if you have a school or a sports stadium where you're showing something, you know, on a relatively small screen, but you need a bright image, that uses DLP technology as well, but a much lower grade of DLP technology.
So this is the highest grade of DLP technology.
Correct. And it also carries with it software that replicates the film image exactly. It replicates the color space of film.
Okay. Tell us briefly what kind of systems NEC Solutions America now does provide in the digital cinema space. What apparatus and for storing and projecting the images?
Well, we looked at it a little differently than anybody else in the industry, and we looked at it as a long-term, multi-screen, per-facility application.
Right.
So we kind of looked at the Digital Cinema Initiative, or DCI specification, which, on a side note, was formalized and sent out. You probably saw the press releases on the 27th of last month, so just a few days ago.
We haven't really covered that. I think we want to talk about that just a little bit. Why don't we stop now and talk about that a little bit? Who issued that, and what were the main provisions in that standard that were issued, and what's the importance of that?
Well, the Digital Cinema Initiative was a group formed, I believe, about three and a half years ago by the then eight primary studios.
Right.
MGM, of course, has now been bought by Sony, so there's one less.
Right.
That group was funded by the studios to set standards from a technical standpoint, or rather to recommend standards from a technical standpoint that would allow for deployment of digital cinema, as a complete environment, rather than have 15 different compression schemes and 12 different security schemes. What they've done is they've done all the legwork and all the research to get you the best picture, the best sound, the best security possible, and those are the specifications that they've set forth.
And the purpose of that was, of course, so that films made by any studio can run on systems made by any manufacturer.
Absolutely.
Okay, and was that a pretty successful effort, do you think?
They've done an amazing job.
Okay.
It's been a long and hard job, and in a lot of ways, probably a pretty thankless job, but they've certainly done an amazing job at doing it.
Is the standard now finalized, or do the studios need to sign off on it?
Specifications are now finalized. The studios have signed off on it. It's now with SMPTE, which is the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers, to actually ratify it as a standard.
And how compatible with it is are the NEC Solutions products?
Completely.
Okay.
So what we did is we looked at the long-term goals of the specifications. They have kind of short-term goals and long-term goals. We went ahead and skipped forward to the long-term goals.
Right.
So that as we deploy systems, they will match the specification in the long term. So we have what we refer to as our star core or hub server.
Right.
We have our star show or screen server.
Right.
They work in conjunction with one another. The hub server takes all the content in, sorts it, sends it out to the individual screens, keeps a backup copy on the Fiber Channel hard drive, and acts as a backup to any screen server that might have a failure problem.
Okay.
The screen servers then act, for lack of a better term, almost like a solid-state VCR or a TiVo type of system. It's a hard drive that plays the content out to the projector. And it's networked in to the hub server, which has all the control software running an entire multiplex all at once.
Okay. What does it cost a typical, let's say, a 10-screen multiplex to acquire all the digital hardware and software that it would need to receive, store, protect, and display digital cinema?
Right now, depending on, on our own systems or any others, because everybody's fairly comparably priced.
Right.
Today, it's probably about $100,000 to $110,000 to do it, but the minute any of these business plans that are out there coalesce and start moving forward, you'll start to see that price come almost instantly into the $75,000 range.
Okay. Does that mean it makes sense for, and what's going to drop the price?
The quantities.
Oh,
because
okay.
Right now, all the projector companies are making, small quantity runs. The server companies that do specific hardware to this are doing small quantity runs. In our case, we customize our already high availability and fault tolerant servers to be cinema servers through our software application.
Oh.
So we could actually make enough servers for every screen out there if they wanted to use our servers.
Oh, if for individual now, are there many quote individual theaters, or are almost all the theaters part of chains now?
There's still what the industry refers to as mom and pop, which will be people who have anything from one screen to, even up toward 100 screens. Once you get to up around 100, then it becomes more of a chain. You do have smaller boutique chains that are even less than 100, but they have very well-known names because they're in, very specific areas, like, say, an Ultrastar in San Diego or a Krikorian. In the South Bay area and coming up toward L.A.
And are most of these purchases going to come from the big chains, and are they going to buy them all at once and deploy them to their individual theater complexes?
I think you'll see it be across the board. One of the things that NATO, the theater group, has been very...
That'll be the National Association of Theater Owners, not the North Atlantic Treaty organization.
They've been very concerned to make sure that it's a fair and equitable distribution of digital out there, and that it's not just to the majors. So I think you're going to see it across the board. You know, you will see people, you know, doing it everywhere from the smallest private-held companies up to the biggest.
Do the chains, though, is it a decision that's made by the individual locales, or does the corporate management decide to buy it for the whole system?
For the chains, it'll be corporate that decides it.
Okay. So you're saying that to do it today is about $100,000, but to do it in a few months is about $75,000.
Correct.
Does that mean people are going to wait a little bit and put their order in and say we want to get it at 75 instead of at 100?
Well, there's a number of business plans that I can't go into detail at this time because we don't own the business plans.
Right.
We want to service those plans.
Right.
But there's a number of plans that, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners have read about or heard about. There's been leaks in the press.
Right.
But those plans dictate a larger scale deployment. And with that larger scale deployment, obviously if you're making digital cinema projectors and you're making 10 to 15 of them a month, it's going to be much more costly to make 10 to 15 a month than it is to make 2, 3, 400 a month.
Right.
And therein lies the biggest cost savings. So once any of these business plans come to fruition and large-scale orders are placed, the price will drop almost instantly because of just the quantity buys that people can do.
Okay. And as of now, how many digital cinema-equipped theaters are there? Why don't we go from the planet down worldwide in the U.S. and California and for our listeners here, some of our listeners here in the Los Angeles area?
Well, basically, on a global basis, there's around 365, I think, is the current number.
So you go to see one every day for a year if you want to travel around.
Perfect. There you go. Nice worldwide tour.
Right.
We have approximately 80 of them in the United States. And when I say we, I mean the U.S. as a whole, not
right.
NEC.
Right.
And those 365, those are all cinema screens.
Right.
In addition to those, there's, you know, quite a few post-production houses, probably in the 60 to 70 range, that are spread throughout the world, that are here in L.A., New York, London, Paris, you know, some of the major post-production headquarters of the world.
So they're almost as big a market right now as the theaters.
Almost. They're a good percentage of that. You know, and the theaters, obviously, there's a lot more theaters out there, so the growth, once this starts moving, will be much faster in the cinema side.
Right.
The U.S. has approximately 80 of them, of the 365. And California, Southern California, I believe, has around, if you count San Diego, Los Angeles, the kind of the whole area between the two, you're looking at, I believe we have 12 in the area now.
Okay. You, without being too favoritistic, could you mention where some of them are?
Sure.
And feel free to just mention NEC installations if you want.
Well, no, what it is we specialized as we started to roll out, and this is one of our biggest things that we've got coming up that we didn't cover on our last interview, is that we as a company looked at it at Digital Cinema as post-production needed to come first.
Right.
Because you needed to be able to post-produce the films digitally before anybody could show them digitally. So we specialized from a projector standpoint in post-production. We had the smallest, lightest 2K, which is the current standard, projector available on the market. So we've been very, very successful in the post industry. We have approximately 40 units in the field in post-production.
Which is about 50% market share then.
Exactly. It's a little over 50% market share.
Okay.
So that for us is a very big deal. You know, we have units at almost every studio and every major post house that you would know of. We're very proud of that fact. But we as a company made the decision to create a small projector first. So our large-scale projector, which will kind of leapfrog everything else in the field because it will be able to do the largest, brightest image of any projector on the market, we will be showing initial runs of that unit starting in the September-October timeframe, and we will have them available for sale in the December-January timeframe.
Just in time for the Academy Awards.
Exactly.
Are those 4K units?
No, these are all 2K.
So these are the largest and the brightest, but they're 2K.
Correct.
What's the difference between a 2K and a 4K, and what's the story about the rollout or the for the 4K?
The 2K, 4K, it's a battle currently being argued within the entertainment industry. 4K is said to be the long-term goal of the DCI specification.
What is this 2,000 or 4,000, what does that refer to specifically?
It's 2 and 4,000 lines of horizontal resolution.
Okay.
So across the screen, going up and down, there would be 2,000 or 4,000 lines. One of the things that the 2,000-line argument has in its favor is it has the software that goes with it that replicates film color space.
Right.
It's also made to replicate the look of film.
Right.
4K, currently, the only 4K on the market, or coming onto the market, I should say, is Sony's 4K. And it uses an LCD-based technology, not a DLP-based technology. And DLP is fully digital. LCD actually converts the digital signal to analog for playback. It's the panels, the LCD panels, are actually analog technology. They use the same panels that you see on your laptop screen. Although it produces a beautiful image, it does not replicate film. So that's part of the current argument as well. And, you know, whether or not long-term, we and our two DLP competitor companies move to 4K will be how the industry reacts and how the industry pushes it, and how Texas Instruments, who creates the core technology, how they end up viewing it.
Okay.
So that long-term, that's a bit of an unknown.
Right. I was going to say, a lot of this sounds pretty arcane. It's like how many angels can dance on a head of a pin. It's how many lions can dance on a screen.
Exactly.
It's kind of the same issues. All right. Now, given that it's going to cost around $100,000 now, soon will cost about $75,000, who's going to be benefiting the most between the studios and the exhibitors in terms of the savings that are going to accrue once a digital regime is in place as opposed to a celluloid film regime?
It's actually both, because people like to say, oh, the studios are going to save so much money on their print costs. Well, they will save money on their print costs, but they will be paying probably, to coin a phrase that some other people have used, virtual print fees.
Right.
And those virtual print fees will be paying the companies I mentioned earlier to actually duplicate these files and send them over satellite or on hard drives or on DVD stacks.
Right.
It's not as if they go from, you know, $1,000 a print to free.
Right.
They may go from, you know, $1,000 a print into the hundreds of dollars per print.
Right.
So there is significant savings, but the exhibitor also doesn't have to build up prints. They don't have to train people in handling film. Most of the younger people that work in cinemas are very comfortable with computers. So being these are computer-driven content files, they'll be very comfortable with them.
None of that Cinema Paradiso kind of stuff hanging out in the back room with the film projector anymore, huh?
Exactly. So, you know, there's advantages to both sides. You know, the studios will save on print costs, they will save on shipping costs, they will save on destruction costs. The exhibitor, on the other hand, will save on time for setup, will save on manpower for actually doing the splicing of the prints when they come in. You know, so those kind of things they'll save on. They don't save as much, but they do have the advantage, and again, there's a whole business issue that needs to be addressed that they will need to address with the studios, which is they now have access to a huge quantity of alternative content. And what they'll need to do is be negotiating with the studios to allow for either screens to not show film and just show alternative content, or, you know, up until a certain time of day, it shows just alternative content and then switches to film. Because obviously, on a Friday night, you're not going to, if you're Disney or Pixar, you're not going to say, sure, you can pull our next picture off Friday night to show a rock concert, because the money is generated on that Friday night.
Okay, well, talk a little bit more about the technology and the business part of this alternative content. Are you saying that given that these machines are going to play digital files and that the wherewithal to produce digital files is, I'm producing one right now for that matter, is going to mean that barriers to entry putting content into theaters is going to change a lot?
Correct. I mean, you know, if you want to look at it in the long term, if you owned a cinema and you're, you know, very well integrated into your community and you're say you're down by UCLA, you may want to, you know, work with UCLA Film School and anything that's shot digitally or available digitally, you may want to run a student film festival that the students can come and see and they pay to go in and see it, but you're generating revenue for yourselves and doing a community service for the school.
You could, in fact, run digital dailies this way, couldn't you?
You could, yeah. I mean, that would end up being costly because you have so many small screening rooms around the post industry.
Right.
That's where you go to run your dailies.
Right.
And keep in mind, with those 40 projectors we have out there and our competitors have out there, in the post industry, you can go run digital dailies today.
Right.
But, you know, you also have things such as you could have an interactive game on screen. You could have art house films running, you know, as a matinee piece prior to the major films. Long term, it opens up the possibilities of having multiple versions of the same films. You could be running it, you know, the L.A. market has a huge Hispanic community. You could run, you know, every other screening could be English and then Spanish, English and then Spanish.
How important is this going to be in terms of having the studios retroactively digitize their libraries?
Probably not as important. I mean, there will be cases where you want to run old films and have film festivals. And one of the other, for lack of a better term, one of the other very cool things that's going on right now is you have a couple of companies that have technology where they 3D old pictures. They can take any movie and make 3D files out of them for digital playback. And quite honestly, I've seen a couple of some of your listeners may have, if they're in the industry, attended Show West this past year, this last March, and there were major motion picture directors showing 3D retroactively created footage.
So you're saying that you take the celluloid film, you digitize it, and then you run it through a grinder and turn it into 3D?
Correct. At Show West, George Lucas showed footage from the original Star Wars, or I should say The New Hope. Now.
Right.
Rodriguez showed things that he had created in 3D from Spy Kids 3D. You had Peter Jackson showing footage from The Lord of the Rings.
Is this 3D that needs funny glasses or not?
It does need glasses, but they're not the old red-green glasses. They're the type of glasses that you would use in an IMAX 3D. They're active polarized glasses.
Right.
And I will tell you that this footage was very impressive.
So this is opening up a whole new set of opportunities in a lot of different areas. What you're saying for 3D, for alternative versions, and also for lowering the barriers to entry for Tuesday afternoon showings of films, where the theaters they're going to have the sunk costs of these of this equipment, and they can take advantage of it in ways that would complement rather than compete with the major studio releases.
Correct. I mean, one way to look at this is there's now capabilities to allow for some stuff that used to be very lucrative but died away due to the cost of prints.
Like?
Which was, think of when you and I were kids, there were Saturday matinees.
Right.
And you could go to the theater and you could see cartoons and you could see serials. Well, those kind of things could come back because you have a lot of children's content out there that goes straight to home video.
Right.
And say you've got, you know, and many of the studios do that. They'll do a major release of a film, and then they'll have follow-up films or straight-to-video films.
Right.
Well, now they don't need to go through the cost of creating it as a cinema-release film. They could do it as a, you know, a half-step down from a general cinema release, but it would be an excellent entertainment opportunity to go see it for, you know, possibly a lower price on a Saturday matinee, where, pardon me, where kids can now go back into cinemas on Saturday mornings and see, you know, maybe an hour and a half feature that would have been a direct-to-video, as well as, you know, four or five short cartoons in front or behind it. So that's opening up stuff that used to be really popular that you can now do cost-effectively.
Okay. Let's focus on two other aspects of this. Are there plans in place now by which the studios are going to in some way help out theater owners to bridge the transition here?
There are. I'm not a studio person, so my background is studio, but I'm not really qualified to answer that.
Right.
I can say that there are certainly very strong rumors in the industry that that's what's happening. But again, there's also these third-party business plans. Whether the studios take part in that, that's unknown. Plus, there are issues with the studios where they have to be very careful because of the old Paramount Dissent Decree,
right,
where the studios cannot have ownership in the exhibition chains.
There are a lot of creative people, even creative lawyers in Hollywood, though, who might be able to figure out ways to do this.
Could be, and I'm sure everyone is looking at it. Because it is, the reality is it's in everybody's best interest to move over to digital cinema.
Okay. Now, there's been a lot of talk in the trade press and the general media lately about a decline in movie theater attendance, which is being blamed variously and collectively on ticket prices being too high, movie quality declining, and increased options for viewing very high quality and quickly released DVDs on increasingly sophisticated home theater systems. What impact has this trend? First, how strong a trend or a problem do you think this is, and what impact do you think it's had on plans by the studios to underwrite the transition or for the theater owners to make the transition? In other words, if there are not going to be so many people coming to theaters, are they going to do this? Or, from what you've just said, are they going to do this precisely because of that so they can bring in new opportunities for themselves?
I think they'll do it. I don't think it'll have an overall great effect on it. This business has been cyclical since the very beginning. And you always have people in the press interviewing and talking about it and talking to people at studios about it. And whenever you have any business, you know, drop in business capability or drop in revenue stream, everybody tends to go, oh, my God.
Right.
But if you look at it, there have been cycles throughout the years. And I think this is just another one of the cycles. But I do think moving to digital cinema will get people excited about going to a theater again.
I mean, after all, in the early 50s, when television came in and everyone stayed home to watch TV, the industry decided to go to CinemaScope and huge biblical epics and whatnot to bring people back.
Right.
So this could essentially be another cycle of that in which they'll be going to digital cinema to bring everyone back.
Right. And keep in mind that, you know, a lot of people today, and I have to say myself included, if I forget to go to a film or I'm busy for a couple weeks when it opens, I'll think, well, I'm not going to bother to go see it now because the print's going to look horrible, the presentation's not going to be good because it's been in the theater for a while.
Right.
I'll just wait for the DVD. Well, the reality with digital cinema is it doesn't matter if you go 6 weeks into the run, it's still going to look like the day they opened it.
What's the ecology of how that information's going to get out to people? Will people understand that?
I think so. I think you'll see a big push from exhibitors and from studios to let people know.
And they'll say, good as new.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now speaking of, that's interesting that you mentioned the DVD, because that's sort of the next place I want to go here. What would you, in your own personal viewing habits, what's the ratio of watching a DVD at home versus going to a digital theater right now for you?
Well, going to any theater, it's probably half and half.
Okay.
The bigger pictures, I always try to go see it in a cinema. And to be quite honest with you, if I had more free time, I would probably see more things in a cinema because
okay.
I personally love that experience.
Again, you formerly a studio person. Do you think that if it's possible to say generally about them, do the studios mind if they make their money increasingly off DVDs and use live theater as mostly a marketing tool and a loss leader and a way to essentially advertise because they won the weekend?
Well, I don't know that anybody would mind or not mind that. I mean, if that's where the industry goes, that's where it ends up going.
Right.
I can tell you that you did hit the nail on the head, though. The films that are released theatrically are always much more successful on DVD than those who have not had a theatrical release.
Right.
Even if they're a very good film, they're just, you know, the whole marketing push for the theatrical, people remember it when the DVD comes out.
It's like winning an early primary or something.
Exactly. And when, you know, one of the things, though, and everybody answers this question differently, but in my own case, I will go see a lot of things on in the theater, and if I like it, I buy the DVD as well. And then if I've missed it, I'll buy the DVD to watch it the first time. And if I don't like it, I'm always sorry that I spent the money on the DVD.
Right.
So, you know, to me, the seeing it in a cinema is an entertaining evening out, and then you know if you want it for your collection or not.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you think that the existing digital cinema solutions from NEC could, whether the, you're talking about how the price is going to drop by 25% when the big orders come in, could that go even further, for example, that the digital cinema solutions could be simplified and or scaled down and priced competitively enough so that they could be sold to high-end home video consumers?
Oh, people buy them that way today. you know, we there have, you know, you have like the next step down projector,
right,
which doesn't fill a 60-foot screen, but would easily fill someone's home theater at 12 to 15 feet,
right,
and look absolutely beautiful.
So you're already, so you're ahead of my question. Even you're selling these already.
Yeah, but again, that's a completely separate technology that doesn't. When you see it at home, it's the same as seeing it at home today on a TV. The difference, you know, if you go see a film in a theater,
right,
and then you watch it 6 months later on your DVD player at home,
right,
even on a great screen,
right,
it's the color space is video color space. It's different than film color space.
Well, I guess I was asking, you know, whether there must be some studio executives or other people who can spend $75,000 and put one of these in their entertainment center.
Oh, absolutely. And there are. There are people at the studios who have these systems at their home.
So they're getting the film color space.
Right. And then that, you know, that's usually what they're using it for, is they can check on the dailies and stuff at home.
And what I guess I'm asking whether there's going to be a convergence of that moving down and other systems moving up so that, the kind of systems we've been talking about here will become more widespread as home entertainment center cores.
For the general population, it probably would not come down to a price point that can be used,
okay,
in everyone's home. There are, however, projectors that people, including my own company, NEC, make for the home environment. Again, they're video color space projectors, but they will do an absolutely beautiful image. But they're just like watching it on your great plasma screen at home can be a wonderful experience. It's not the same experience as seeing it in a cinema.
So there's still gradations, and so
yeah.
In addition to the sort of tribal experience of sitting in a darkened room with other people and watching something,
right,
there's also enhanced technical capability that's,
correct,
going to be available,
correct,
in that venue.
You know, and who's to say 100 years from now we may all be having it beamed directly to our homes or even our heads.
Right.
But you know, it's interesting, so many people have expressed so much concern lately that the cinema business, as we touched on earlier, is a failing business. Well, it's always been cyclical, and no matter what, you know, we're moving and improving things. But probably one of the biggest technological leaps for the general consumer was videotape. You could tape the shows you wanted to off the air.
Right.
You could go to, you know, any video store and rent the newest movies that only came out 6 months ago,
right,
and take them home and watch them. That was never, that was a quantum leap difference to people. And television, going from radio to television, was a quantum leap difference.
Right.
And those were both heralded as the end of cinema as we know it. And cinema has grown larger and stronger after both of those. So I think cinema is going to be around for a while.
So, like, backtrack a little bit and talk about the greater variety that's going to be possible given the technological platform transformations and combinations that we've just been talking about in terms of video podcasting, for example, as a way of providing millions of sources of digitized content, which can then be displayed, if not necessarily at Tuesday afternoon digital cinema screenings at the multiplex, on home digital cinema centers, and the gradations between major studios, independent studios, people with cell phones taking videos of their friends, and how there's the whole ecology of production and distribution is being transformed here.
Well, as they say, more and more people seem to be making their own entertainment.
Or as Jimmy Durante used to say, everybody wants to get into the act.
Exactly. You know, you're still going to see, because obviously people that are shooting stuff on their cell phone, it's not going to look like something that's shot by a digital or film camera.
Unless it's Martin Scorsese's cell phone.
True, there you go. He probably could pull it off.
He probably could.
But, you know, the tools to the professional that are available to the professional filmmaker are always going to be that much better than anything else in the industry.
So it also means, though, that that kid, that proverbial kid with the low-end cell phone, video phone, who enters it into his high school contest, will eventually get promoted until he's shooting at Paramount.
Hopefully so. I think you've hit another nail on the head with that comment, in that the proliferation of small-scale digital cameras, you know, the handheld video eights, the disc cameras, anything that's currently available to take in video and to shoot video, they're becoming cheaper and more prolific. Everybody's got their hands on one. What that's going to end up doing, I think, is allowing Hollywood to find that next great talent that much easier.
Okay, and to display it eventually on a big screen with NEC Solutions America digital cinema projector.
Hopefully so.
Okay, if you want to just sort of wrap up with any final comments about where the technical development is right now and what you see as the likely rollout scenario for digital cinema in the multiplex in the next few months and next few years?
Sure. I think from a technology standpoint, those companies that are serious about this industry are pretty much there. You're going to see stuff being finalized based on the DCI specification from a number of companies now through the end of the year. I think by the end of the year, you will also see fairly large scale in the vicinity, say, of what's already out there in the U.S., going out as first generation prototype sites for these major rollouts. And you'll probably see rollouts starting in the first or second quarter of next year. I think if it takes a lot longer than that, then it could still be years and years away. But some of these third-party business plan providers, they have excellent ideas, and I think you're going to see stuff starting to move in 2006.
Okay, and presumably the theaters will be prominently featuring that as part of their advertising campaigns.
Absolutely. If they don't, they're crazy.
Okay. So we'll look forward to that, and we'll be able to understand what's going on a lot better having talked and listened to you. I want to thank you for participating today in Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World discussion.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye.
Bye.